based on where to give the consciousness in the process of kirtan, like where to focus the attention.
Yeah, that is a good question. And
because, you know, there's the external activity,
right.
Like Kartel's nicely trying to play Mananga,
right.
Trying to sing nicely or whatever, but what's the, you know...
Well, I'll just say a few things that come to mind. So, like Srila Guru Maharaj, if someone came and told him, like, so-and-so is really good, we really like his kirtan, Guru Maharaj wouldn't be happy to hear that. It's a little odd, like he said, oh, so-and-so's kirtan, there was some devotee, it's very sweet. Guru Maharaj once said, like, his argument is sweeter. Like, he was a little defensive, you know. His argument is sweeter. Sometimes that person would do mock argument with Guru Maharaj. Okay. So when they go, so-and-so, I just someone mentioned, so-and-so Prabhu's kirtan is very sweet. And Guru Maharaj, like, it's almost defending, right? His argument is sweeter. You know, and then he's like, yeah. So if he heard that some reputation is developing for kirtan, he wouldn't be happy about it. Because it tells him that the emphasis is going towards performance and style and dexterity and ability, right? Which is the antithesis of what it's to be. I mean, that said, we can imagine, like he's also mentioned, like, we'll say, yeah, but we see paintings of gopis playing mridangas or other types of instruments, and that's true. And he's mentioned in that regard, too, like, when someone achieves their swaroop, that the instrument might be part of the swaroop, say, in their eternal identity. With that comes the full knowledge of how it's practically, like they say, a bodily extension. Mm-hmm. So with that developed Krishna conscious awareness comes also the awareness how to play that instrument, make it sound in a particular way. So sometimes also I'd read, say for example, in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, and they'll describe Mahaprabhu and his devotees, they're having some particular kirtan, and I'll say, Mukunda began to sing Gurjari Rag. So then I'm like, you know, your immediate reaction, go, you know, write that down. What's that sound like? But to think, like, and maybe we can find, I'm sure you can go online and find it somewhere. And then, and there'll be some tape of somebody somewhere singing that rag. But to think that that's what Mukunda is doing is the wrong idea. And we see that they're not doing that. I once asked Guru Maharaj, Gurudev, Srila Govinda Maharaj, about, you know, some, well, one thing I said this, you know where Haritala is, down the street from the Mott, that famous place, Haritala? Mm-hmm. Gopal Singh, I mean, it's legend, there's Mahaprabhu once rested there. So like there's Visramgat, which means rest, sleep, in Vrindavan. During some kirtan or something, Mahaprabhu once rested there. That's what they say. So every year at Gaur Purnima, they would hire, you know, I didn't know all that, but I once came back to the mat, and I just like went by their kirtan, say on the rickshaw, and I was saying, I just came in, I was sort of like really impressed by it and sort of excited about it. And I said to Gurudev, I said, thinking, I was being humorous even, I said, Maharaj, those sahajiyas down the road, they're really good. You know, like, so I was making my own little joke about Gurudev, the master, you know, without, you know, showing this very serious look on his face. He goes, oh, Mark, those are not sahajiyas. I was like, they're not? He goes, no. You don't know. He goes, they're professional. So for them, like, oh, like, because I thought, oh, maybe I'm committing some of it. But they're professional. So they have, like, musicians have a fake book with many different, like, what are we doing? We're doing Kali, oh, it's Kali Puja, you know, page 85. Everybody, you know, what are, oh, it's Ganesh Puja, Krishna, they do them all. And they're the best mridanga players, kartal players, singers, all of that. They are really good. Because I asked Gurudev also, I said, what about all these melodies that they employ from time to time? Where did they come from? He said, from us. He said, but once they take it, then we, like, leave it to not be associated with that. So, you know, we use the word kirtan as in sravan, kirtan, smaran, etc. And in that famous sloka in the commentary, Vishwanath Chakrabarti, no, Sridhar Swami saying, ado arpita pascha kriyata, for it to qualify as being devotion, it has to be beginning, middle, and end for Krishna. He, in other words, this idea that you do something and you give the result to Krishna, that's not bhakti proper. He's saying, no, that's not it. The beginning is for Krishna, during is for Krishna, and everything's for Krishna. And it's conceived of that way from the beginning. That's the impetus for doing that. So that means, like Guru Maharaj said so many times, talking about the holy name, and it's equally applicable to kirtan. We'd say, quote this part from the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, generally known as the Ajamil section, and say, this is one line, I'm sorry, it says, Vaikuntha Nama Grahanam. So, Vaikuntha, sometimes we think, oh, we always, every time we have this sort of knee-jerk response, we hear the word Vaikuntha, we think four-armed vision. It means that also, Lakshmi Narayan, four-armed Vishnu forms, etc. But it not only, sometimes Vaikuntha means spiritual. Like Guru says, the Vaikuntha world, he means the spiritual world. So here when he says, Vaikuntha Nama Grahan, is it spiritual sound? That's how he can. He said, that's what we're concerned about. Like someone said to him once, well, they'll read somewhere, it says, you know, Panjapa, it can be chanted, you know, softly, silent, mentally, it'll mention, or aloud, different things. Which one is the best? Someone asked Guru Maharaj. And he said, he said, it's not that one is better than the other, it's the quality of it determines whether it has any substance or not. So when it comes to kirtan, and it's one of the most famous examples, is that, you know, Srila Saraswati Thakur, 24 hours before leaving the world, he has different devotees singing songs actually for a few months. And Jajavar Maharaj was singing like high songs for him personally in the last few months of his life. So that means, like, if you walk it back, December, November, October. So October, November, December of 1936, Jagannath Puri, Jajavar Maharaj is singing some Astakalya Leela songs, about this, that, the other, just for special for Saraswati Thakur. But anyway, as we're told, the day before his departure, 24 hours before, he calls Guru Maharaj in to sing Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, which is the anthem of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's, you know, it's how do you say, hard to properly express the meaningfulness of this song. It's because he's saying, all right, he asked him to sing, you know, a song written, it's not, it has, you know, super meaning attributed to it. So I can only use this word, an anthem. Like a country has its anthem, that, you know, all the citizens rise and they stand, they sing from their heart. And their, so, I mean, it's a crude example, but there's some parallel. This is the anthem written by Narottam Thakur of the Gaudiya Vaishnava, those in the Rupa Nuga line. So that Saraswati Thakur calls him forward to sing, you know, the national anthem of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas is a big deal it has it's meaningful and symbolic and substantial ways. And we know that Guru Maharaj, his nature, by his own description, you know, back pushing, and by that he means shy, modest, in the background. He doesn't immediately come forward. And the manager, he's thinking, well, Sridhar Maharaj isn't like one of our better singers. He's saying, so someone who was an excellent, what do they call it, kirtaniya, which is, you know, Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, he's on, he's an excellent singer, and Sridhar Maharaj is hesitating, so you sing. And he starts singing. And then Saraswati Thakur stops him. He said, I'm not interested in hearing a sweet tune. And he's saying, yes, you're a good singer. That's not what this is about at this moment. And to his credit, Puri Maharaj, he would tell this story. He never tried to conceal this. And it was full Vaishnava humility. And he'd tell the story equally enthusiastic as anyone else could, you know, a disciple of Guru Maharaj, telling you like how significant it was. Because he is the person who says, we witnessed a mystic power transmission of Saraswati Thakur to Srila Sridhar Maharaj of the Rupa Nuga line. Now, sometimes we've had the opportunity to hear Srila Guru Maharaj sing, and I would say, even from, you know, our very limited perspective, has some particular charm to it, but not that we're perceiving the charm or the substance that Saraswati Thakur was. But so he said, no, you know, I want to hear it from him. So how do you recognize when something is heartfelt? Right? So there's a famous saying in the Bhagavatam about Bhavagrahi Janardhan, and that a person inept in the Sanskrit language, you know, this example is given, what are the words, Vishnave and Vishnaya or something, you know. So the person who is not a pundit and is not Sanskrit adept says it improperly. And the pundit says it properly. But what the point they're saying is that Krishna, Bhav, we translate that in various ways. Sometimes it means heart. Like we'll say, oh, it means mood or feeling, or it can also mean those things. But more often than not, Bhav translates as heart. That's why Guru Maharaj said, Bhav Kanti Radha Bhava Dyuti, her heart and halo. Once he was searching for the meaning, he's translated himself the word Bhav as mood 100 times. But on this particular day, he was going, you know, and Bengali speakers were there, and we were there, and we're all like suggesting these different words, like, so some mood, Guru said, well, mood can change, and someone suggested something else, and then he finally came out, he said, heart, and translated duty or kanti as halo, whereas many times it's translated as effulgence or radiance, so that's when he said heart and halo. But anyway, so as Bhava Grahi Janardhan means that Krishna, he's relishing, or tasting the heart substance of the bhakta. And that's why that story is given about when Krishna unannounced shows up at someone's house and the wife is all excited, like, oh, we, you know, need to offer something. She goes and gets some bananas and she comes and she's looking. Krishna is so beautiful. Right? If 10 million cupids personify as one, like we have trouble with one cupid. Right? It's a big issue here. You know? So 10 million cupids, that type of seductive attraction, like everyone has experienced attraction to someone that's very intense and like riveting, where they like can't stop looking at them or thinking, and they're saying, so multiply that 10 million times, and then you're going in the direction of what all attractive Krishna means. Right? And that lady is like peeling the bananas, looking at Krishna, and as we know, she throws the banana away and offers him the peel. But it's like, really saturated with bhav, with heart. So Krishna's tasting that, and it's extraordinary. So it's the same kind of point. Someone, you know, to say it in parallel, maybe they're not the best singer, but their heart is in it, in the right place. That's what he's tasting and appreciating. Whereas someone might be dexterous in terms of mridanga or singing or whatever, and the heart might not be there. So does it mean that all skilled mridanga players are, you know, heartless? No. But everyone has to be aware of when there's too much ornamentation, too much emphasis on style, as opposed to substance. And we see in the few recordings we have of Srila Gurudev singing in the presence of Srila Guru Maharaj, that's what those kirtans are, extraordinary, and they're also they set a standard. I can't think of it, there's another word, but you know, they're the model exemplary. They're the models for what should be done, because in Guru Maharaj's presence, and an inordinate amount of ornamentation, embellishment, or style is not going to be tolerated. And so you hear, we have mainly this Radhastami Kirtan. And Gurudev singing these songs, and there's a particular way they do it, and we, at least you notice it's very simple. You know, it's not, he's not singing in such a way as no one can respond. He's not drunk, although we know Gurudev was an excellent singer, his father was a singer, and, you know, guru of singers and that kind of thing. And from an early age, Gurudev was also doing that. But he's like sort of containing his vocal ability and keeping it very simple so that people aren't thinking about his voice or his vocal ability. But those who can hear those songs and those words and their meanings, the full concentration is going towards that. So really, the ability of the mridanga players and the singers is to serve the song, not to draw attention away from the song toward their ability. And you hear that in the Rath Yatra also. There's, when they have those kirtan parties, how many are there? Because there's one on each side, the front and the back. That's four, and then I think two more. Yes, I think. And then there's two mridanga players in each, so that means like 12. And you can imagine these are inconceivably qualified players. But there isn't a big description about that, other than the sound they're making is resounding throughout the universe. And they're talking about the quality of the kirtan. Then Mukunda began to sing, and he sang this, or Swarup Damodar started singing these slokas. There's the least amount of emphasis about ability. So we try and do it that way. But still, we want people to know how to play the mridanga properly. Just because you know how to play properly doesn't mean you're doing something that's mainly stylistic. No, there's a way that it's played in Gaudiya kirtans. Maybe there's a few different styles, but there's a particular way. You're familiar with it, Sarva Priya Prabhu. Gurudev's heard him play. I remember, of all the singers, rarely did I hear Gurudev compliment, but the person he complimented in my presence was Krishna Chandra Prabhu. He really heard him singing at different times and expressed, you know, like smile and liked his way of singing. And we know Sarupriya Prabhu's, on the Mridanga side of things, he's captured that tradition from the older players at the Mat. It's almost like a lineage. Mm-hmm. You're also adept, she has learned, others have learned, but he sort of fully got the wealth from the Mat Mridanga players. And you know, we, as I say, I point back to that time of what was done in Guru Maharaj's lifetime, because here he's sitting on his veranda here, and then you go down, and here's the Nath Mandir, and there's a big doorway. So all the sound is coming from there to him. And if someone was playing in a way that he didn't approve, someone was sent down and told them. You know, Guru Maharaj is disturbed by the kartals or by the drum or the voice, you know. So they would get, as Madhusudan Maharaj, Mukunda Prabhu is saying, he'd have a word with that chap. But we see Mahaprabhu always giving recognition to heart and substance. Like the time he's going to the Rath Yatra, I mean not Rath Yatra, to Jagannath Darshan, and there's so many people we know in India. Well, I'll preface this by saying, because in the Darshan, there's excitement to go and see the deities. So once when they're making a big temple in ISKCON in Bombay, and the architect, who was Dutch, Dutch knows something about architecture. He was telling Prabhupada, I'm designing this in such a way as wherever you are in the temple room, you'll have full darshan of the deities. And Prabhupada was saying, that's not good. And they're like, what? I thought that was the idea. Like, you know, no columns, pillars, nothing big. Oh, and like, so even if you're way in the back, you'll be able to have full darshan. Prabhupada said, no. He said, it is better when it is small, then it creates some excitement. Everyone has to run to the front. So I'd heard that before. And then with some devotees, we went to Natadwar. You know Natadwar? It's, this is where, we always talk about Gopal, Madhavendra Puri's, the deity that he finds. Gopal is on Govardhan Hill, lifting Govardhan Hill, that deity. So because of the Muslim invasion, etc., he was moved from Govardhan and he ended up in this town called Natadwar, which is more or less either in Gujarat or on the edge of Gujarat. And this is a town, I mean, I went there in 1976, but, you know, in India it's probably the same, or close to it. But we saw a town that existed for the deity. We always hear these things like in the Bhagavatam, in the book or somewhere. This was a town that was like that. The deity was the center of every activity. So, for example, all the shop owners, and you know, they're selling, you know, saris, the typical stuff they always do, the fruit sellers, the guy with the blender, and you know, everybody. Then it's like, it's time for arati. Every shop closes, and everybody goes to arati. And where the deity is, it's not so, it's around like, what's that, 2 meters or, you know, something like that. And because we're waiting for it to open for a long time, like in the back of the temple. And then the doors opened, and within 30 seconds, they were like, 500 ladies in front of us. I was like, where did they come from? And like, you know, it was like roller derby. You had to like fight your way to like, I'm sorry, ma'am. You know, like, and like, get up to the front where you could like, and then, you know, someone pushed you out of the, you know, whoa, whoa, you know. You only got to see the deity for like a brief time. And I say, oh, this is what Prabhupada's talking about, that there'll be some excitement. Or like you go to see Radha Raman, and he's literally this big, but this extraordinarily beautiful deity, small area, door. Yeah, again, you have to sort of do something. You know, it requires something from your part. That's what they want. That's what Prabhupada was saying. He didn't like the idea of someone sitting, you know, 100 feet away in the balcony and there's nothing to want them to come out of their seat. They have a full view from there. No, they should, you know, put some energy in it like that. Sometimes Guru Dev would also say that. Fight for your seva. Should be willing to do that like you would for anything else that's desirable. So anyway, Mahaprabhu, he's going for the Jagannath Darshan. And remember, we hear from Gurudev that Mahaprabhu is like, I don't know it in meters, it's like 7'6". What is that, 2 meters? More than 2 meters. Yeah. Yeah, so he's very tall. And some lady comes who's eager for Jagannath Darshan, and she climbs up on his back because he's so she can see. And the devotee with Mahaprabhu is supposed to keep people away. He's going, get there. He's like going to pull this lady. You don't know what you're doing. And Mahaprabhu, and he's chastising her. Mahaprabhu said, no, I wish that I had her eagerness. What she has got, that's what we want. You know, like Mahaprabhu, whoever, she's not thinking that. She's so eager to see Jagannath. That type of heart or quality. At the same time, we should try and sing nicely. That in a way that is pleasing. And we see when we've had kirtans in the presence of Srila Gurudeva, the most expert person will play the drum. In the case in Guru Maharaj's time, he would ask Srila Gurudeva to lead the singing. In his absence, someone else who was qualified. Cool. Is it just a bug or it's a mosquito?
Mosquito.
Uh-huh. Once some devotee is like very strong anatomy, like the German Übermensch kind of thing, you know, and was qualified in yoga and so many things, you know. And someone was telling Gurudev about that. And Gurudev said, yes, but he was no match for a Bengali mosquito. Because he was like out for two, you know, he got, he was like paralyzed.
Is that the one that actually died?
He didn't die.
Because I heard there was one devotee who actually, he was like a health freak, you know, completely. Oh.
That can also happen. But my point is that he was so big and fit. Mm-hmm. And he said, but not a match for a little, for a Bengali mosquito. So quality over quantity.
Remember that story you told about
Gaurash, the mosquito
net and mosquito
nets? Oh, for Gaur Purnima. It's like the first year we're going to have a big festival of devotees from all over the world coming to Navadvip. And, you know, Gurudev is feverishly making buildings, resident, you know, trying to accommodate everyone. Because the mat that you see now was not there at the time. And he was in anxiety because he ordered all these mosquito nets and they had not come yet. So just a few days before, all the devotees were going to come like within a day or two And then the mosquito nets came, and in the afternoon, Guru Maharaj would be in a light mood and have some, you know, light discussion about things, not heavy philosophical things. And I was there with him, and then Srila Govinda Maharaj came up the stairs, and he was very pleased, happy and relieved, and he said, "Maharaj, the mosquito nets have arrived. Now everyone will be happy." And Guru Maharaj, he said, "But the mosquito section, they will not be happy." I mean, this shows something of his sense of humor, but it also shows something about the depth of his thought, that he could so quickly think that they'll experience some unhappiness. And sometimes about that, he would quote this sloka of Raghunath Das Goswami that says, "Yad kinchit trigumaki kuta mukham goshte samastamitat sarvananda maya mukunda lilanukulam." I forget the rest, but it's saying, well, lilanukulam param. That even the insects in Vrindavan and the Dham and the things in the sort, whatever they are, they're lilanukul, like we say anushilana, anukul, things that are favorable. They're assisting on some level in the pastimes. So Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, even they're worthy of my worship. Right. So Srila Guru Maharaj is very concerned on the Mat property, like they didn't remove one more tree than might have been absolutely necessary to build the mat. And you see sometimes, in fact, Gurudev just building around a tree as opposed to removing one. They're showing some respect because it's, you know, from the Dham, born in the Dham, sprung out of the soil of the Dham. It must be some, you know, person worthy of worship. And after Srila Guru Maharaj's disappearance, Gurudev pointed out like a tree that left in separation within a short time afterwards. It gave up its body, and out and in honor of that tree, Gurudev took that tree, and the doors to Guru Maharaj's samadhi are made from that tree. That type of, you know, deep, cultured thinking.
Very beautiful
doors. Yes. Any questions about anything?
A friend of
Mookie has come. Where did you come from? Which city?
City. You don't know.
Oh, I won't know the name?
A small city.
Uh-huh. There are small cities in China?
Yeah. The biggest, there are small cities.
What's it called? Which city?
It's Fushun.
Yeah. Fushun. We all know for sure.
Now you know.
All right.
Mookie met her in. Where did you meet Mookie?
She goes to school with Kirtida. They learn Thai language.
Right. Learning Thai with Kirtida.
Really?
Staying here for a year.
Uh-huh. Some hardcore training. Krishna Priya will test you. Once Guru Maharaj said to me, And that afternoon, the similar time, he said, "You don't like to learn Sanskrit?" Like that. And I said, "No, actually, I really would like to learn." And a few different times started, but things happened in such a way as I couldn't continue. And then he said, I know something Sanskrit. And I think this is, you know, the author of the Prema Dhamma Deva Stotram, the Prapana Jivanamritam, numerous slokas in praise of Srila Saraswati Thakur, Gorkhashordas Babaji Maharaj, the Bhaktivinoda Viraha Dasakam, the Vyas Pranam, the Gadadhar, you know, all the Saraswat Arati, you know, well, it's Bengali, but you know, growing, saying, "I know something Sanskrit." That type, he didn't say, like, "I'm a Sanskrit." Once someone brought someone to him, and they're trying to impress Guru Maharaj, and they said, "You know, not only does he speak Hindi, but he all in English, but he also speaks Sanskrit." And Guru Maharaj, "Oh." And then Guru Maharaj started saying, like, "How are you?" Like stalking them in conversational Sanskrit, because they spoke Sanskrit in Guru Maharaj's home. Men, women, everybody, they could talk to each other in Sanskrit. And then suddenly that man couldn't say anything. And then we realized, you know, it wasn't 100% true about him being able to speak Sanskrit. Because we're like, "Oh, good, and then we'll have a Sanskrit conversation." And in India, with Gurudev, sometimes they have, on a certain station, at a certain time in the afternoon, they have the news in Sanskrit for an hour. And the man comes up and he just reads the news in Sanskrit. It's really extraordinary. But anyway, so at that time, Guru Maharaj said, "I know Sanskrit." He said, "We are not interested in the language world. We are interested in the thought world." And he said, "In whatever language it's expressed in." And then he told this story that when, two things. One is, when Saraswati Thakur was giving lectures in South India, sometimes he's speaking Bengali, Sanskrit, English, different, and some man started saying, "Swamiji, if you will just speak in one language, then we can follow." And he said, Saraswati Thakur responded by saying, "It's not that I'm speaking in Sanskrit or Bengali or English or any other language." He said, "I'm trying to represent the upper world to you, and whatever language is appropriate to express that conception to you, that's what I'm doing. So it's not that I'm speaking any particular language, but I'm trying to represent concepts to you." And Guru Maharaj's other example was when he was preaching in South India, and some man said, "If you want to preach here, first you should learn Tamil, and then you will come, and then you can, you know." And Guru Maharaj said, "If a man," he pointed to a pond, and he said, "If a man is drowning there, should I first go to learn Tamil before I call for help for him?" He said, "No, by gesture, by gestic, somehow I will convey to someone the urgency of this situation." He said, so Krishna consciousness is something like that. But for those who have some capacity, some ability, they can learn. And Thai language, we know, is not easy.
Yeah. What do you think, besides, without language, we can communicate with other people?
You can. Sometimes our Gurudev would say heart to heart. A heart type of communication. Some things are universal. But sooner or later, we'll have to have some clear communication as well. So it will be helpful in the modern world to learn English. It's good because it's just the default, de facto international language. Mm-hmm. Like the language of diplomats 100 years ago was French. So anyone who was in an embassy or a diplomat They learned to speak French. So the Chinese ambassador spoke to the English ambassador in French. That was the language of diplomats, but it's changed now. And now it's English. So you know what CCTV is?
Of course.
All right. All right, so CT, that's a term. They don't know. I'm just using you to tell them. It's a Chinese, English language, Chinese stations on 24 hours a day. So they realize the necessity, because people have many misunderstandings about China, stereotypes about China, the country China and Chinese people. So 24 hours a day, the station is there to give news about China and help English-speaking people understand it better. But at the same time, you know, it goes both ways. So you can understand many people in China learning English because China's influence is spreading around the world. But and Gurudev many times would tell, like in Russia, he would tell the Russian devotees to have their children learn English, like as a seva, that that'll be good for them. It'll be good for their children to learn English. And it's true in this mission. And it doesn't mean it's better or worse or anything. It's just the way it is. So in this mission, if you know English, you'll be able to interact with more devotees and have more service opportunities and varieties of situations.
You think in the future it will change? We don't use any language, just use heart.
That's like very... No, because here's the point. There's a what we want is where the heart and language are the same. Where the language is a pure expression of heart.
Heart have language.
Right, but that's the spiritual world. That's the Krishna world, where the heart and speaking are, there's no difference. That's what we want.
So is that possible here?
It's worth trying. To, in varying degrees. Yes. Like, to give a similar example, so we were making books, and we were trying to make them nice, and it's actually on, like, the original question about kirtan, too. There's, like, style and substance. So we thought, we want to make these books as nice as possible so that people will receive them respectfully and take them seriously, and then they'll get exposed to this, you know, divine substance. So then, and so we had some success doing it. Then later at the Mutt, Gurudev started having the end, like revive Jai Sri Press, which was his press, and started having them do some more publications. And so then there was a question about typefaces and different things like that. And one devotee thought, like, by de-emphasizing style and saying it doesn't matter, it's the substance, that by saying that in Guru Maharaj's presence, that Guru Maharaj would say, yes, he is understood, right? You know, he would score some points or something. So he said that in front of Guru Maharaj. Yeah, we don't, what it looks, we're not so concerned about that. It's just that the substance is there. And Guru Maharaj said, no, that is not our concept. And it began, he's the ultimate, you know, promoter of substance over form. Right? But he, in this instance, he chose to contradict that a little at first. And then he explained, he said, in Vrindavan, he said, form and substance are identical. He said, it's the highest quality substance and, you know, and pure spiritual form. That's our target, where form and substance become one. Here, we're in a plane where when there's a contrast between the two, we side with substance. We're not going to sacrifice substance for formal aspects, for stylistic things, or formalities, or any such thing. Right? But we're striving for that point where, like, heart and speech are one, right? The spiritual world, they say, all talking is singing, and all walking, movement, is dance. So, Guru Maharaj would say, when sound is infused with beauty, it's song. And when movement is infused with beauty, it's dance. So that's what dance is. It's beautiful movement. And song is beautiful sound.
Gaurav talks about beauty. What does he actually
mean? Krishna. Krishna's beauty personified. So any discussion about beauty is either directly or indirectly a discussion about Krishna in his world. And that word is anandam in some places, and other places it's sundaram. So sometimes we say sat chit anandam. So there, or satyam shivam sundaram. So the Guru Maharaj, anandam, which is ecstasy, is inextricably linked to beauty and harmony. So he's saying, Krishna's abode is all accommodating, it's all harmonizing. So what's a concept of harmony? Things that are apparently undesirable are harmonized in Krishna Lila. That's a meaning, another depth level meaning of harmony. What is normally considered objectionable, stealing, thieving, is harmonized and beautiful in Krishna Lila. So this is like harmony in a musical sense and harmony in another type of sense. So in that sense, it's all accommodating. So he's saying, this plane, which is most exclusive in terms of quality, so is all inclusive in terms of how you will be allowed to connect with it, the generosity, the liberality, and its distribution. But it's ultimately the most exclusive plane. So then you think, oh, well, since it's so exclusive, it's unable to accommodate or harmonize. But that's the wrong idea. It can accommodate everything. As we hear in the Charitamritam of Srup Damodar, in that Harapanchami description, Srivas Thakur's teasing Srup Damodar, saying, what is the opulence of Vrindavan compared to the opulence of Vaikuntha? Vrindavan, he's saying, they have some flowers, they're like cows, flowers, trees, river. But, you know, Vaikuntha, jeweled palaces, jeweled thrones, vastness, you know, all these type of majestic, magnitude. And Srup Damodar quotes Bilba Mangal Thakur from the Krishna Karnamritam, where he says, Chintamani Charanabhushana Manganam Sringara Pushpa Taravastara Suranam. Vrindavanam Vrajadanam Nanukamadenu Vrindani Cheti Sikusendu Aho Vibhuti. They're saying, oh, you don't understand. What is the Aho, the Vibhuti of Vrindavan? That, yes, they have some cows, but those cows are Surabhi cows. Right? The trees are Kalpavriksha trees, desire trees. And the soil, he says, Chintamani. Charanabhushanam Angananam. In one part of this soil, so Vrindavan is described as a small place, right? It's 32 square miles. Right? But within that, we think, well, that's a small area. It's village-like and small and human-like dimensions, etc. In that, in one particle of the soil are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. One planet being a million miles wide by a million miles wide. So there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets and like a particle of soil of the plane that's supposedly 32 square miles wide. And out of that soil spring Chintamani gems, spiritually conscious Chinmoy gems, and the Brajagopis string them and wear them on their ankles. So he's saying, in one of these gems, there's more concentrated, you know, opulence, sweetness, majesty than the whole of the innumerable Vaikuntha planets and Dwarka put together. And one of those gems, of which numerous gems, make an anklet on the lotus feet of a Brajagopi. That's his answer.
Of which there are millions.
Of which there are millions and trillions of them. And there's one Krishna. But that's what Srivast Thakur wanted to hear. So he seemingly spoke against that. Because, and it also, it's inconceivable to our, admit that you realize the mind cannot grasp this. It's beyond mental and intellectual grasp of Anmanasagochara. So it can only be understood through the cultivation of faith. Back to the heart. Heart culture, faith culture can access that plane. But not the mind, it just, how can the 32 square miles accommodate in a particle of soil innumerable planets that are a million miles wide, that have innumerable, but that's the nature of that plane. And that's what, and the Brajagopis are moving there. And that causes Uddhava to say, Asamaho Charainu Jushamahangsam Vrindavane Kimapi Gumalatosadinam. That he who's an intimate friend of Krishna and Dwarka and the queens of Dwarka, saying, a higher position to being the intimate friend of Krishna and Dwarka and the queens of Dwarka would be to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan. That's beyond my conception. So that's the infinite. So we should be careful when we think that we've have some idea about what it is, because we saw a picture. Or or read a description somewhere. Like Guru has told a story of when Krishna wanted to spotlight the devotion of Srimati Radharani and the higher conception of chastity. So he becomes sick and Yashoda doesn't know what to do. Then Krishna expands himself into a mystic physician. And so he says, I hear your son is sick. Yes! I got some inspiration to come. Oh, yes, yes. He comes, he examines Krishna, says, I know how to cure him. What should we do? A chaste girl will take a porous pot, means a pot with a bunch of holes in it, and go bring some Jamuna water. And he sort of, all right, she goes, and as he also wants to not only exalt Radharani, but humiliate the other group a little bit. So they go to Jatila and Kutila and say, this is the situation. And they're thinking but wait, if I go and pick up the pot's full of holes and I pick up the water and all the water comes out, then everyone will know I'm not a chaste woman. So they don't want to do it. They're saying, this is impossible. And so the dilemma is involved. And then Krishna suggests Radharani. So as Guru said, everyone in Vrindavan, there are rumors. So they're thinking, she will be, they said, a chaste girl. And Yasoda's going, is there not a chaste girl in Vrindavan? Who can go do that? So they get Radharani. And then Radharani goes and she puts the bucket in the water. And there was a poster. And Guru Maharaj had seen that picture. And it's kind of a charming little picture. And Radharani's going like this. And you see Krishna in the water. And so she lifts up the pot. And all the holes, no water comes out. And she brings the water to Yashoda. And they cure Krishna. And so everyone has to reconceive what is chastity. these are the pastimes of Krishna. So always revolutionary reconception of everything. That's the infinite according to Gurus. Not that everything you understood yesterday, now it's different. It's not a repeat thing. We think, oh, I remember that time I was enlivened. I want to feel like that again. It's never the same. It's similar, but different. Because Krishna is living, growing, dynamic. So, and also on that, so Chintamani Charana Bhushana Angananam. Bhushana means ornament, Anga means like their ankles. And but there's another part in the Bhagavatam where it says Krishna is Bhushana Bhushana Angananam. Means he's the ornament's ornament. So, like in this world too, when they want to sell some, like especially ladies' clothes, not only, I mean, you know, but particularly ladies, they take the most beautiful model and they put the, like if you put your shirt on a supermodel, you know, they go, wow, that's a great looking shirt. You know, like, or dress or whatever it is. Because the model's beauty is what's making it. Maybe it also looks good. But on the model, it really looks good. And then someone else by the mirror, you know, and they're looking in the mirror and go, it's not like in the magazine. You know? So, Krishna, so if we employ that principle here, so the same, when Krishna's ornamented with something, that ornament becomes extraordinarily beautiful. Right? His divine paraphernalia. But in his case, again, it contradicts rationale and everything. Oh, so many jewels and stuff like that? No. What is his prevalent? Forest flowers. He's carrying a stick, a bamboo flute. Sometimes it says he has a mala on his waist of gems for counting cows. He's like, you know, like we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He's chanting the names of cows, and they have groups, like some that look like tilak. You know, the cows you see, they have a tilak. They're the tilak group, and there's particular cow. Then there are other ones, they have a head that looks like a mridanga. So that's a group. Another one looks, you know, they have these, and so that, you know, he has to keep track of a lot of them. And it makes them happy, like chanting their names. But his paraphernalia in that sloka, Nomijate Bravabhuse Taridambaraya, Gunja Vatamsa Paripichala Sammukaya. He's wearing the Gunja Mala. Have you ever seen them? These little, like, red berries that become beads. They're bright red with a little black dot on them, and they represent Radharani. So he likes to wear these. Gunja Vatamsa. He wears a peacock feather. Sometimes the peacocks come to Krishna and they ask him to play the flute. They say, you play the flute and we'll dance. And then if Krishna said, well, what tune, key should I play in? Bees will come and go, and they go, oh, all right. And that's how he gets the tune from a bee. A bee goes, all right. And he starts playing, and then the peacocks, they start dancing. He's playing, they're dancing, and then at the end, the peacocks are so ecstatic, they lean forward and say, like, they offer one of their, and he's like, and then they're, ah, Amargopal. They think, see, he wears peacock feather. Don't forget that. Simple, not a big crown. I mean, sometimes we're doing that, but, you know, really, like, pure Krishna conception, you can see 100 slokas talking about he's got the peacock feather and his tilak, and that sloka that Gurudev likes so much, Kosturi Tilakam, from the same book, Krishna Karnamritam, Kosturi Tilaka, means his tilak is made from musk. That's Kosturi. Kosturi Tilakam Lalata Palake Bhakshastale Kostubam. Like we go Bhakshastale Madhavam to him. To him, for his, he's got the Kostuba gem. Kosturi Tilakam Lalata Palake Bhakshastale Kostubam. Nashagre Namamoktikam, wearing a pearl. There's no Karatale Venam Kare Kankanam. And the same, when he plays the flute, his fingering of the flute is very beautiful. The way the fingers move and play the notes. You can imagine it has some sort of hypnotic beauty to see him doing that. Sarvanga Harichandanam, and all over his body he's got chandan and different beautiful kinds of ointments. Sarvanga Harichandanam Chakalayan Kante Chimuktavalin, wearing pearl necklace. But interesting, mukta also means liberated soul, and it means pearl. So, is he wearing a garland of liberated souls? I mean, if they're spiritually conscious gems. So then you have to rethink. That's why they're saying Shantarasa in Vrindavan is a higher position than Sakya, Vatsarya, or another position.